With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it, young boy! Continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Better than it's going for the poor Cleveland Cavaliers, who might not be able to roster a full team by tomorrow.
Yes, they are once again without a point guard. It's going to be a little tough. Dante Exum and Darius Garland will miss Wednesday's game against Orlando, but Isaac Okoro is back, so that's something. Nice to have him back in the lineup. But to talk about both the Cavs and big picture stuff with the NBA, friend of the podcast, Matt Moore from the Action Network makes his return. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good. How are y'all?
I'm doing well.
Just dandy. It's a more fun season than it should have been, I think.
Yeah.
Thus far.
Yeah. We're definitely enjoying some of the COVID weirdness. I think that might have something to do with the Cavs hot start. But, you know, they seem to be a little more prepared for this season than I would have even anticipated with this quick turnaround time and whatnot. And I know in preparing for this podcast, you mentioned that you were working on a feature for the Cavs, and that this is actually nice timing. So what is kind of your first impressions looking at the Cavs this season?
So I think there's two big takeaways. One, it's very easy to identify when you start watching all the games, what teams, can I curse on this podcast?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What teams have their shit together and what teams do not have their shit together? And the Cavs have their shit together on both sides of the ball. Like, a lot of this is we get confused about, like, yes, talent matters. It matters more than anything else, and talent will make up for a lot. But in the course of an NBA regular season, what's actually really important is that you're organized, is that you know what you're doing on both ends of the floor. And the Cavs have a general sense of what they're supposed to be doing on both ends of the floor. Like, there's real organized trust in one another. The defensive stuff is really fascinating to me, and that's what I wrote about over at Action Network. There's a lot of reasons to be like, this is smoke and mirrors, and this is going to collapse, and they're going to turn back into a pumpkin. I will say, however, that effort goes a long way, and trust goes a long way. And a lot of there are metrics that I can find to kind of counterbalance some of the stronger ideas that this isn't sustainable, to say that this is actually something that they can pull off as long as they're willing to keep engaged. Like, that's going to be the trick, is they have to stay engaged on the defensive side of the floor. Now, what I think is interesting is if you look at some of the advanced metrics, like this is a good one. Clean the glass has them at the 12th best expected effective field goal percentage. Like, they're supposed to be a little bit better than they are offensively, which is like, that's a really good sign, which counterbalances the fact that based off of their expected opponent effective field goal percentage, they're supposed to be the worst defense in the league in terms of shooting efficiency. but they are counteracting that, I think, a lot with their how they're causing turnovers. There's often this idea of like, well, you can't just rely on turnovers, and you can't rely on turnovers to be a great team, and you can't rely on turnovers in the playoffs. But if you want to be a decent team in the Eastern Conference, that's a pain in the ass. There are worse approaches, and the Cavs have been very good at that.
Yeah, I feel like to me, that's kind of the encouraging thing is, while sure, turnovers are, you know, to some extent dependent on your other opponent fucking up, there is a lot of kind of built into the DNA of this roster, a bit of a chaos engine, especially in the front court. Do you kind of agree that the turnovers are actually, I mean, maybe not at this rate, like they're starting power forward and center are not going to lead the league in steals all year, but do you believe that the kind of the chaos of forcing turnovers is relatively sustainable for this team?
Yeah, I mean, they're highly active. And one thing that we found is that deflections are a better indicator of how disruptive your defense is than anything. Now, that's one of the advanced stats that you can really actually glean something from, which is funny because it's on the same page as screen assist. And I like screen assist, but everyone, you know, makes fun.
I think we don't like a certain fan base's usage of screen assist more than we hate screen assists.
Right. But like deflections, I think are really important because it's literally just like, how often do you get your hand on the ball? And like that, I think is like a really big thing to be able to do. And like, if you're able to create turnovers by getting your hand on the ball, like Larry Nance is doing, a lot of that's like organized chaos. Like they're not just randomly gambling. Like they have a real dedication to what they're doing. They're executing the game plan, and Andre Drummond staying engaged, I think, is a large part of it.
I like that your daughter has made an appearance on the stream and there is just no reference to it.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Isla. Okay.
Now you go. Yeah, I'm also impressed that you managed to get her up on your lap without breaking sentence. That's true professionalism right there.
I would have stopped altogether. That's parenthood veteran shift that I'm just not there yet.
And we're the ones that are derailing the podcast for it.
Just takes reps. That just takes reps. That's all.
Well, the one thing that really stands out to me is just kind of, especially with the amount of bodies and turnover that they've gone through this season, the fact that they're still executing and they're still understanding where they're supposed to be. Yeah, they might not make the right play. They might not execute properly, but they at least understand where they're supposed to be. There's communication after the play. And the fact that like 1 through 15, that seems to be the case, is really kind of a feather in the cap for JB Bickerstaff, which I think there was a lot of questions about what he was going to be as a head coach, having two interim opportunities prior to being with the Cavs. And this is kind of the first chance we've had to figure out exactly who he is as a coach and kind of get a better feel for the type of team he wants to have. How big of a role do you think JB has had in this? And you know, I guess we should credit the coaching staff as a whole, right? Like it is a collaborative effort.
Yeah, collaborative effort, much like Steph Curry. I think when you look at it,
you know, your
talked
audience,
about
Matt.
Things being organized. Like that's where I really look at coaching. The Magic are like this, another really good defensive team where even if you're just like, it's Fournier and Aaron Gordon and Markelle Fultz and Vucevic, the Magic still manage to be in the playoff race every year because they know what they're doing. Like they just are organized versus there are teams that you can watch and just tell that like they have no idea. Now, one of the things with Bickerstaff's teams has been they start off pretty well and you're like, there's some good stuff to work with here. And then they lose the rope. And like that to me is the question is like, can Bickerstaff hold on to them, keep them engaged, especially like, okay, they're starting to hit injuries. This gets harder to win, right? Some of those games that might be coin flips turn into losses. Mm-hmm. If you're losing every single night, can you keep them engaged? And it's tough to do. If he can do it, they're going to be pretty decent. I think the fact that you have guys like Drummond in a contract year, like that's extra motivation. The fact that it's a shortened season, I think that helps. It's shorter to get to the end point. I think that helps. They're going to be in it because the Eastern Conference is probably going to be very inconsistent. That'll help. But that to me is like the big question is you can stay organized when everybody's like, you know, playing together. But once guys start to check out a little bit, it falls apart because if you don't have that accountability in each other, it gets really rough very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, we had Larry Nance Jr. on the podcast before the season started and his big word, he just kept drilling it, accountability, accountability, accountability. And that's really what the team had really lost the last couple of years, especially as they kind of ventured down into Tank Town. So yeah, I've been really, really impressed by kind of what I've seen. Has there been anything in your review of the Cavaliers, especially on the defensive end, that's maybe surprised you a little bit? That's because, you know, we know Larry Nance and Andre Drummond have quick hands. Like we've always known that, but is there anything that's kind of surprised you about their play on that end?
I think the biggest surprise, and you can kind of suggest that this is a little bit noisy, but when I went back and watched, it was impressive. They're just destroying teams trying to get putbacks. So they're allowing all these, they're allowing a decent amount of offensive rebounds, but they have, I think they're number one in offensive putback points per possession allowed. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at that number,
I need to get cleaning the glasses.
I was like, what are they doing? And like, they're just like, they don't give up. Like they're physical with you at every single point. Like until the possession is over, they stay with you on every single point. They're really physical all over the court. That stands out. Like they're up in your business. You talked about not always making the right rotations or reads. If you have a bad closeout, it's better to make a bad closeout in terms of you're going to be a little bit too close to them and make them get around you. Like it's okay. If you get nailed with one of the ticky-tack fouls, okay. All right. That's fine. That's better than giving up the layup and not having the backside protection. Drummond has been ridiculous. Exum, who of course has the injury, but hopefully that's short-lived. Mm-hmm. I think Exum's just been fantastic.
He was so good against Atlanta. Like it
just
it blew
so
me away.
Good. Their ability, and a lot of it's just like Nance is this way too. You're not beating them to the edge. Like you're just not getting like there is so much less space for guys driving than you would anticipate. And that makes a world of difference defensively.
Yeah. I even think, you know, we've talked about it on a couple of our other podcasts, even someone like Darius Garland, who we thought showed some signs early on in his career, you know, defensively, but just clearly didn't have the heft. Like he's actually dodging screens a little bit better than he was last year, staying connected to his man, making things a little bit easier on their bigs. One question I had for you is, do you think just the personnel and going from a Tristan Thompson, who, you know, we adore defensively, but to two centers in Andre Drummond and even JaVale McGee, the much maligned JaVale McGee, yep, that are long armed, that can play drop coverage and allow these guards a little more margin for error. Like how much do you think that factors in to the way they're performing right now?
So, I mean, I think a lot of it is, when you're playing the pass as much as they are, cause like JaVale is just like deflecting random stuff out of the air and like grabbing random passes. But that's really good. Like that's a good use of him. Like if you try and use JaVale as like, hey, we just need you to, we need you to be Rudy Gobert. No. Like that's not going to get it done. Mm-hmm. But if you tell him like, hey, we just need you to like cause a little chaos, JaVale can do that. He's a chaotic player. And so I think that helps a lot. Drummond honestly just looks like, I haven't seen Drummond like this in years. He's so locked in. He's so engaged. He's physical. They're actually running. I looked this up on Second Spectrum. The Cavs are running a lot more stuff up to touch, like at the level of the screen. They're one of the higher teams playing up at the level. That doesn't mean that they're always like really up there. It just means that they're further up. And because they're not dropping as much, like Drummond has the ability to get back. When they are dropping, they've been really effective. Like Drummond's ability to navigate that space has been good. He's not just doing the use of Nurkic, take five steps back and watch the guy do whatever. Drops really delicate because you have to be able to stay close enough to where if they shoot, you've got a hand up to distract them and to bother them, but also not giving up space so they get around you. And you have to net like that management of space is really a feel thing. And mm-hmm. Drummond and JaVale have both been very good in that capacity.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that when I was advocating for trading for Drummond, I didn't really expect this kind of a buy-in, but I thought having Andre Drummond at least gives you an understanding from a team-building standpoint of what a big that can be a threat in the pick-and-roll with Garland and Sexton can do, what he can, how a big that plays defense the way Andre Drummond does, what the rest of the Cavs' defense. And I thought that it was interesting to bring him in and kind of gives them some sort of an idea from a team building standpoint, because I don't think Carter and I really expect Drummond to be around long term. I think he's likely going to be gone at the deadline, and that's likely going to make them a worse team. But I do think that there's stuff that you can learn from this experience while he's on the team.
Yeah. And I think, a lot of it too, I think, is going to depend on the market. We just don't really know how it's going to shake out after what right. happened in the summer and like where everything is. Like the market may not be there. And I don't want to like count out the possibility that this can be a happy accident, that this can like just kind of come together as long as you're not too attached to them. Like that's
yeah,
key,
we don't, like, we don't either. For like, I'm actually kind of, I'm more comfortable on the money side. It's the term that would make me nervous. Like if you're giving him
$23 million
a year on a 3-year deal, that's better than if you're committing a 5-year deal with Drummond.
Right. And like, if he's just like, no, like I want 4 years, $80 million, you're just going to be like, we're not there. And like, we're just not there in our, our program is not at that spot. But like, I do want to like leave it open because like, this is what you want to see. And like, he's making good. The big thing is just like, I expected him to check out, right? Like rebuilding franchise, one of the worst teams in the league, bad defensively, going to have to cover up for all these mistakes on the perimeter. A guy that's effort level has been poor consistently anyway. And he's been lights out. Like he's just been, and again, a lot of this is just the mental stuff. It's just like, if you're locked in, that makes a lot of difference. If he keeps the, and that's the problem. It's like, if he keeps it up, then you've really got a chance because like Nance has been so good. Exum's been so good. Sexland has been, I think brings enough to the table offensively for them to create. Okoro looks great when he looks great. Yeah. Like when he does stuff, he looks fantastic. Like, they're not that many pieces away from being like a 35 win fringe playoff team in the East. And you could say like, yeah, but is that what you want? Well, you guys just won the title and came off of like five finals appearances. You may have to take a little bit and just like navigate your way through magic land, being in the playoffs and trying to hope for 1 year where you can make a run, or hope that like Garland or Sexton makes like a massive leap no one's expecting, or you get lucky in the draft again because you're the Cavs. And so like, but like there are these paths for you to make for that improvement. But the biggest thing is just like the Cavs are like a, like this to me, with what Bickerstaff has done, with how this is coming together, they seem like a serious franchise. And that's like a really good thing. Like they're a serious basketball team this year that I am willing to take seriously. And that is a vast improvement over how usually the rebuilds have gone in Cleveland.
Before we pivot off of Drummond, I do kind of want to ask, what do you think of his value? And I'm not necessarily worried about like what his trade value is. What do you think his value should be? Because to me, I feel like there was an overcorrection here. He's a guy who, you know, couldn't be the number one option on an Eastern team, on an East team that, you know, could make any noise. And then I feel, and never has had significantly strong guard play in his career. And frankly, is always going to leave us a little cold because, you know, his passion for basketball doesn't really seem to align with his talent level. But like, do you feel like the market maybe overcorrected on a guy like that? Like if he is your fourth or fifth best player, like, do you feel like the calculus changes on him a bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it just comes down to you can't get so carried away with the good that you leave yourself exposed to risk.
Yeah.
That's the thing is like, you can't have him be a hinge player. He's got to be a guy that you're like, we need him to be good when we're good. But like a lot of it's just like, look, there was like a running thing, I think of 3 years, it was either two or three, during SVG's term, where he got benched when he came to Denver. Like I would be like, all right, I'm gonna check out Drummond tonight. And he would get benched for just like not being there, just not checked in.
Yeah, I mean, he's had games like that this season already. Like as good as he's been, JaVale McGee is the one who helped them win the game against the Hawks. Like he, I think he played 20 minutes, didn't have a free throw attempt, got wrecked by Clint Capella. Mm-hmm. So like those games are always gonna be there. I just feel like the discourse has gotten so negative on him because he does leave you cold, but like what he does is actually still pretty good.
So but this is also the bigger thing is I always tend to look at these guys over the course of their careers and like look at other guys that were kind of similar. He's not going to be this good as a caveat.
No,
but the knock on Tyson Chandler in Chicago was that he wasn't mentally connected, like he wasn't engaged, that he floated, that he wasn't physically, like there was a real conversation with Tyson Chandler in Chicago that he wasn't physical enough.
Yeah,
that was a thing.
Which is crazy,
right? And then like he turns into a defensive player of the year and wins a title with the Mavericks, is one of the best. Like he was awesome in New Orleans, he was awesome in Dallas, he was, you know, other things and on teams that are jokes of franchises, but in general, like Tyson's been an incredible NBA player. Mm-hmm. Or was. And so, but what I'm trying to say also is when Masai Ujiri signed JaVale McGee to that huge contract in Denver, I asked him, I was like, what is this about? Is this about like what you think he does now about the Lakers series, or is it about something else? And he was like, it's about who he's going to be when he's 28.
Mm-hmm.
Because bigs develop late, usually, especially on the defensive end. It takes a couple of years. And it really takes until late in their career. And that was the plan, was for him, but things fell apart so quickly in Denver. And then he's out of the league and he comes back and he finds himself on the Warriors. And now like JaVale's fine. Like JaVale's won titles because he helps. Like he just helps in certain situations because he's older And as you get older, you're less prone to a lack of attention and you're more prone to discipline. Like you just will naturally come because those impulses are less. And so with Drummond, I think a lot of it is like, even if he has games where he coasts, his baseline is going to be higher. His floor is going to be higher because he's older and there's a higher sense of professionalism because he's just been doing this. Like the rote mechanics of the NBA life eventually dig into you. It's easier to do your job because you've been doing it for so long. Right. And I think that's like part of it with Drummond is like, I do expect his floor to be higher now because of where he's at. And I think the contract year thing does help. That's why you want to keep him with some level of motivation to counteract those natural impulses to maybe drift.
Not like basketball as much as we want him to.
Right. It's amazing to see what a difference a change of scenery can make, which can also make a difference for your podcast, which is why I want to talk about our sponsor, Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everybody the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of all that, we'll help get your show pushed out onto Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. The best part is you can get all of this for just $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. Matt, I want to circle back to what you had mentioned about the Cavs looking functional, because when you were mentioning they kind of have the bones maybe or the talent to be a 35-win team. You and I were high on the Cavs and they're over. I picked them for 27 wins. I feel like that's kind of where they're going to go just because they're relying on so many young guys to initiate the offense. But really changing the perception of this franchise, both to being one that's run competently, that makes sound decisions, takes smart swings when they can, and has a young core that's worth paying attention to, like that should be the goal of the season, right? Like it's not all about playoffs. It's about, all right, does the perception change with Garland and Sexton, Kevin Porter Jr., Isaac Okoro, whatever lottery pick they add next season? But like top to bottom, like I really do feel like they're getting off on the right foot to kind of change the way people see the Cavs.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that. I think that there's like a sense of that there's been progress. Like player development is the biggest thing. Is just that I don't know the details on who they've added in player development or if they've added anybody or if they've changed their approach or whatever. But like, I like that they've put together this roster that is in large part, can we get guys to go up one level? You know, can Sexton go to like, okay, he was like, he showed some things last year. Can he go to be like, no, like he's a good player. Can Darius Garland go from a time, like he started off horrible. I like Garland, his rookie season. I like Garland last year. Like I was high on Garland. That's a big reason I took the Cavs over was like, I just believe in Garland. I like what I see from him in the good spots and think he can cut out the low, but like Okoro and, you know, Exum's older now, but still, and then Damian Dotson. And like, I even like those kind of guys, like taking shots on those. Like I like that they decided to take a shot on Damian Dotson. Like I like that. And they have, I will say this too, like if they get to a point where it's like, okay, we're not going to make the playoffs, but we've been competitive. Our point differential is pretty good. We have pretty good records versus the bad teams. That's like the big key is teams will get suckered into like, yeah, but like, we, you know, if we just stop losing to the bad teams, we've beaten these good teams. No, doesn't matter. Those are flukes. You're the outlier. Worry about beating the bad teams. Like you need to be able to compete with like, you need to be able to win games versus the really bad teams. And like, it's funny that the early season is like the Cavs and the Knicks are actually playing surprisingly well, right? Yeah. Like, the Cavs and the Knicks are two teams that are like expected to be at the bottom, and both those teams are, but they're also like, those teams are playing their asses off.
They're well coached. Like I think the Knicks are probably with Thibs there. Like I think they're a better coached team than they were last season.
They're well coached and their motivation level is high. That wanes, and that's kind of the issue, is like eventually like that's the problem, is the talent eventually gets to a point where it's hard to sustain, and then the teams that are trying harder fall off. But I think that, like, just player development, and I'll bring it up again. I know that nobody likes it. I just gotta say, like, I would just keep shopping Love. If it's really just like you got to include picks to pay somebody to take him, okay, I don't get it. It seems crazy to me. Nobody will take a shot, but I would continue to be very aggressive in trying to find a team that is willing to take, that wants to take Love and return assets, that wants Kevin Love.
Yeah.
What about an asset that, like, Justin's been floating this one on Twitter, and Sixers Twitter actually is wildly receptive, which scares me. Like,
they were. I don't know if that's still the case now.
Love for Tobias Harris in a first, just getting them off the Toby deal. Like, is that a kind of deal that, like, makes sense to you for Love, where you're taking back a distressed asset that maybe could become positive? Or do you think they need to trade him for something close to more, like, neutral value at worst?
See, I would go the other route, and I would be like, hey, we'll take your distressed asset. Because bear in mind, Tobias is playing great to start the season. He's been phenomenal.
Yeah, that's why I jumped in and said they might not be willing to do that anymore.
Yeah, but if you trade him for a distressed asset that's a contract a team cannot get off of, that they're just like, this is killing us. Mm-hmm. But you also say, like, I don't want your prime stud. I just want the guys. I want, like, two dudes that your scouting department can identify as, like, there's something there. Like, there's something there. They're just driving them insane, especially for franchises where hope goes to die. Like, that, those are the franchises that I would really look for. Like, honestly, like, I'd be looking at the Knicks and be like, hey, you got a lot of young guys. You want Kevin Love? Because you have RJ Barrett and Kevin Love and Julius Randle, I guess, in some sort of all power forwards thing. Like, those are the kind of things that I'd be looking at. Or if you look at one of the bottom feeders that's just, like, looking to get, like, that has so many young guys and that want something better. And there's always those kind of teams, those teams that are looking for the playoffs. Those are the squads. And then, like, look, the other one that I would really look at is if Portland slides, is I would definitely call out Portland and be like, hey, we'll give you Kevin Love for Gary Trent Jr., Anthony Simons, and we'll take, like, whatever you want. Like, we'll take whatever contract you want.
Yeah. No, I don't think you're going to get a lot of pushback on trading Love. Like, I think everyone kind of wants to see the best for him. And if he's there and he's bought in, that's one thing. But I think both parties, if the right deal was there, would be okay and open to moving on. Moving on. And the other factor is, like, Larry Nance just might be better at this point. Like, better fit, better impact on the game. Like, he just fits really well with what they're doing. So
especially with the kids on this team.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, that's kind of your priority, and it just seems to be clicking right now. So I'm going to be interested to see if anything materializes this year. I don't think it will. I think if there is going to be a move with Kevin Love, it's going to take place in the summer, because there's fewer free agents out there. It's only going to be 2 years on his deal. I just think it's going to be an easier pill for people to swallow, but I definitely think that it's something that the Cavs should be open to. I mean, I don't think anyone should really be untouchable when you're in this situation.
No. Yeah, I think, again, though, I do think, look, I mean, the shooting could turn around and the turnovers could stop. And then this team, like, plummets into an abyss, especially with Exum out, right? With Exum out.
Like, one to two months per
just broke.
Yeah, just broke. So, like, that's horrible, and I feel bad for Exum, and I don't understand why he can't catch a break, and it makes me mad, etc. But, like, look, I go back to this. The Cavs are 12th in expected effective field goal percentage at 54%. They're shooting only 51.8. Like, literally, and, like, when Love gets back, you know that's going to improve. Like, I do think this team doesn't – the big thing is, I do believe this team has transitioned out of – this season is meaningless. They should I would also say this, don't tank. Don't tank. As good as Cade is and is worth it, like, you know that you can get it anyway with the flattened lottery odds, which, not a conversation I want to have with any Cavaliers fan ever again, but, like, you know, you might have a chance at Cade anyway. This draft class is awesome anyway. You're going to get a good one. Like, play the best basketball you can. You're still going to get a good player. And if necessary, like, that's when you can trade Love, right? Is like, hey, we'll give you Love and we'll take whatever you want. We just want to move up in the draft.
Right.
In a good draft.
Yeah. If you develop assets, you can consolidate that talent. Like, I'm going to piss you off here, but we've saw the new lottery odds work against the Cavs. We're falling back every single year. Let's get some basketball karma. Like, I just think and this was something we talked about in the playoffs, you look at those final teams that were there, like the final four or final eight, it's all internal development. Like, it's making the most of the guys that are coming in, because there's so much talent coming into the NBA every single year that no matter where you're picking, if you're a good organization, if you trust your player development, you can try to pull off what Miami's doing, what Denver did, Utah, like all these teams that are always around, Indiana, like it just comes down to player development and maximizing your guys, because the incentive just isn't there to tank. It's you shouldn't botch the development of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler, just to get a 14% chance at Cade Cunningham, because that's, I mean, that you have the same odds of Andre Drummond hitting a three.
That I think Andre's odds might actually be better.
A three in Detroit.
and here's the thing, I'll keep saying this. I think even if it were up to me, and I'm sorry, you can probably hear my daughter just shrieking in the background. We got some teeth coming in, Matt. It's not been a fun couple nights for us.
Been there. It's tough.
It's not fun. And she's a normally pretty pleasant lady, but not the last two nights. At this stage of my life as a fan, I'm not interested in losing on purpose. You know, it's not fun for me. Like, the product that we've got to see over these first seven games, even with the team kind of getting decimated by injuries, like, I'm spending, 70 games times 2.5 hours. I'm spending 150 plus hours on this team. I don't watch them just get their teeth kicked in and let their young guys stagnate. Like, it's just not worth it to me at this stage, especially with the flattened odds. And, you know, sure, I still don't like those odds, and we don't have to have that argument right now because we've had it 1,000 times over. Still don't like them, but that's okay. You know, I think like that is the reality. So the Cavs should kind of proceed as is. One thing I did want to get a sense from you before we kind of move off Cavs and go talk about the league at large. I have to get your sense of Colin Sexton's early season so far, because in my opinion, even though the numbers were good last year, I think there's been something of a paradigm shift in the way he's succeeding this year as compared to last year. I'm just curious what you think of his early season surge.
I think so much of it is just, every season you're going to see fewer instances of knucklehead stuff. And that's a big part of it. It's just like, there are still instances where I'm like, what is that shot? What is that? Yes. But I noticed that there are way more, the balance has shifted now when I watch the Cavs, where I'm like, that's a really good move. That was a really good decision. Like, oh, he didn't heat check. Oh, he ran the offense. That was a really good, those little things. And he's moving a lot. Like, I like the way that he's playing very much. And there's a continued growth in his control of the game. I think shifting to more of a defensive team, I think, is really good for him, because honestly, it's like, if he has to spend more energy on defense, then I think that there's less of an impulse of, well, I didn't do anything on defense, so I'm going to do everything on offense. Like, have a little bit more balance, a little bit more balance. And I think that that's going to help a little bit. I still think there's a lot of areas where obviously he can improve and there's still gaps in that. But in general, I like his feel for the game. I think that to me was like a big question mark his first year. And that's improved so much that I'm to a point of I'm pretty high on these guys. And the numbers are all kind of bearing it out in terms of what he's doing. Like, he's just been a lot more consistent with everything that he's doing, and he's shooting well. And he's got one of the better runners in the league. If you have a good runner, that opens up everything. Like, the ability to hit runners and the short range jumper range is the area that's between that, much debated death land of mid-range and the simple stuff of layups and threes, sure, but if you can consistently make that short range shot, because the defense is always, I've been looking at this a lot, 90% of the league is playing drop coverage over 60-70% of the time, which means that you're always going to have that gap and they're always going to give you that shot. So if you're able to hit that, which he is this season, Purse Energy, which obviously has a lot of some issues, but he's got 27 points on 24 possessions on runners. That's great. And those short range jumpers, I think, is an area where, and floaters, that's an area where you can really make hay.
Yeah. I think part of me, we had Dave Dufour on recently on the pod, and he kind of mentioned that his biggest thing about what's changed for Sexton is that his teammates are better. And sure, I think that's overly simplistic, but I do think the one space where I really see it is that Garland is competent now.
Yeah.
Garland is the guy that gets them into their offense and allows Colin to be what he is, as opposed to what we would like him to be, which is a pure point guard, which
right.
I just don't know if that's in him.
Yeah, it's yeah. less time on ball, right? Like he's at a career low of time in possession when he's getting it. He's playing off ball. He's kind of learning. And like you can see him learning every single game, which I think is kind of that's the fun part of Colin Sexton. That's how I went from being someone that was out on him to now kind of one of the apostles here, spreading the good word of Colin Sexton. Matt, I do want to get one of the questions we asked Dave, and we've been asking a few people this, is rank in terms of ceilings, the Cavs kind of core four of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Kevin Porter Jr. in terms of kind of how you see them.
It's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
That's yeah. a really good question. I will say that I like Garland's ceiling the highest. I think Garland can legitimately get to the highest level. I just like his all around game. I just think is really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that the combination of skills that he brings to the table, I think has the highest. Sexton, I think is second.
Okay.
I'll put Okoro third and then Porter. I do think that Okoro has a chance to maybe move up into like first or second. Like that's mm-hmm. those top three are pretty close. I'm not as high on KBJ for various reasons, but I do think
that the floor is certainly low. That's if you're saying who has the lowest floor, it's definitely Kevin Porter Jr. at this point.
Okoro, like he pops off the screen when you watch. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of plays where I've watched and just been like, okay. Like that was that's no, like I'm making notes about Okoro doing stuff. And the biggest part is like, there's been not complaints, but I've seen criticism just basically be like, he's not doing anything. And I'm like, because he's still trying to figure out what he should do, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a team. This is one of the things I think is impressive about the Cavs. They don't have defined roles. Like mm-hmm. the only role that's really clearly defined, I think is Drummond. I think even Sexton and Garland are still trying to figure out like the give and take and how to play together and all of that stuff. And the wings are trying to figure it out. And Larry Nance Jr. is just like, I'm just going to play hard. That's all I'm going to do. And he's been great. But I do think that like that's one thing is that as Okoro figures out, as the Cavs coaching staff figures out who Okoro is and he figures out who he is in the NBA, I think he can only get better.
Yeah. The reason I like asking that question is because we do get a kind of wide range of answers, right? Like it depends on what you prioritize. I've had Garland kind of number two there. Dave had Okoro at number one. He's just all in on him after what he's seen. So I do find it really interesting. When we're looking at kind of early season surprises, and Cavs have been one for a lot of people, is there any early season start, either positive or negative, that has changed your outlook on a team? Or are you still kind of waiting for more of a sample size? Because I know you watch as much, if not more, film than anybody. So that's why we love having you on. So I was wondering if anything does stand out.
The Suns are better than I expected. I thought they were going to be good. I didn't think they'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks' defensive effort is just really inspiring. Like the Knicks are just trying really, really hard. That's going to fall off and they're going to get tired and hurt and they're going to be bad. But like I feel it necessary to compliment them. Indiana is a sleeper.
Sabonis is so good.
He's amazing. Oh,
they're all so good. Like they are like Oladipo hit a deep three yesterday, two deep threes. Brogdon is playing out of his mind good. They're probably the best passing team in the NBA right now, including Denver. They have shooters. They're averaging
28 assists a game. I just noticed that.
They have shooters. They have finishers. I think Miles Turner is defensive player of the year right now. They are a genuine threat. And nobody's taking them seriously. They're mm-hmm. probably going to get hurt because that's what happens to these teams. Is like everyone that watches the league nightly is like, they're really like, you're not under you. You don't really realize how good the Pacers are. And then they get hurt. And it's like, oh, you don't have to pay attention to them anymore. Wah, wah, wah. I think I continue to be baffled by the respect that Portland's getting. I don't think Portland's good at all. I think the defense, they tried to go to a two on ball up to touch play on screens and it's horrific.
Poor Robert Covington. This guy keeps, he's a great defender that keeps getting miscast as like the shutdown guy, right? Yes. So like he's always put in, like the last few stops, that's the role he's been put in. And it's like, no. He's a really good team defender, but he's not Kawhi. He's not going to clamp someone like Tony Allen.
Like, he was legitimately defensive player of the year material in Minnesota for about 2 months before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's just like pretty good defender. Like, that's it. Like,
Green D guy.
Pretty good. You know, and like he helps, but man, oh, it's bad. Denver, I think, is going to be okay eventually. Mm-hmm.
Jamal seems to have woken up a little bit.
Yeah, Jamal's woken up, and they're, a lot of it's like, you look at the record and you're like, why are they this bad? And you're just like, they lost to the Kings twice, once on a buzzer beater, and the second time because I think his own team loves trolling Michael Malone by having him lose to the Kings because it makes him insane. I think the usual suspects are pretty good. Houston's still in this weird variable place. Dallas isn't as good as I thought they would be. Two teams I will tell you that will be better than they look right now are Chicago and Washington.
Okay.
I was a Washington fan preseason.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? I like that stat so much from Cleaning the Glass of expected field goal percentage, which is basically on where they shoot from, what's the average that teams are shooting. Washington's number one defensively. Wow. They are like 27th in actuality.
The scowls are paying off. Well, I guess not paying
they're
off.
They're the very opposite of paying off.
But, yeah, but that's the question, right? And, like, you can take that stat, and there are teams, like, the Knicks are the opposite, where the Knicks have the worst, like, teams should be shooting the lights out, and they're not. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to be like, yeah, but that's because they're playing like men on fire because Tibbs has them fired up every game and Julius Randle's in a contract year. Like, I've just went down and I just watched Julius Randle's closeouts the other day because I'm a sick person.
Yeah.
And Julius Randle's closeouts are like, he is flying through the air like Jimmy Snuka. Like, he's just all the way out closing out on these guys early season. And the Wizards, meanwhile, it's like these guys should be missing shots. They're just making everything. So I think the Wizards are going to improve as the numbers kind of regress a little bit towards them. Chicago's offense is way below where it should be. I think Chicago is better than it looks like they've
had. I was a believer in them. I thought that they were going to get a play-in
Levine is playing so well and no one's talking about it because they just like even defensively where it's like, is he still bad? Yeah. Is he better than last year? Yes. And he's really efficient and he's playing within himself. I still believe that the Wizards and the Bulls are going to be pretty decent this season.
Do you have a take on the Toronto Raptors? Because, my God, like, one thing
Justin's dad's got a lot.
Yeah, yeah. My dad listens to the podcast, and I had basically a podcast with him earlier today on the phone because he wanted to vent about them. And I do think one thing that people are kind of not thinking about a whole lot is the fact that they are playing 72 road games. Like, I watched that game against the Celtics and the crowd was cheering for the Celtics. Like, the fans in Florida are going there. These guys are not living in their own homes. And I just think they're older. It's not as good. They've lost a lot of key guys and the motivation to actually get going just doesn't seem to be there.
So you talk about the home stuff. Here's the problem. Early in the season, and like, this part of this is because the Raptors have struggled. I get that. But still, early season, road dogs are 27-30 straight up. And because I work at Action, we do betting 34-23 against the spread. Road dogs have been supernova. There's not as much of a home court for anybody because there's no crowd.
Fair.
The travel is bad for everybody because of the condensed season. And I just really look at the Raptors and I just wind up going like, man, you're going to get me in trouble when Canadians listen to this.
You're welcome.
Kyle's another year older and he looks it. Like,
he's 5'11 and 35. Like, this happens. Just,
he
like,
shouldn't be doing if this. You watch, even.
Like, the problem is when Kyle looks great, he looks incredible. It's when you watch possession by possession that you start to go, ooh.
Mm. And he's still probably their most impactful player, yeah. But yeah, like, they don't have as much of a margin.
Yeah. Yeah, their lineup data is pretty friendly to them, right?
Their scheme, in large part, was built upon hard closeouts. Sink to contain the rim, hard closeouts. You give up some threes, but that's fine. Give them up to the right people, but you also, you're trying to force them in to help, but Ibaka and Gasol are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, now you're a genius playing now the five and now you don't.
Yeah. And now it's Chris Boucher. Like, it's just a lot different now. They don't have it. And like, a lot of it also is like, they have a really small backcourt. They lost a bunch of size. Siakam's taking a step back. And that combination in general, this was a team anyway that relied on basically savvy and consistency in their continuity. And they lost some pieces and they're trying to add new. And like, this is why like Nurse has flamed the other dudes, right? Like he was calling out Matt Thomas. He was calling out Terrence Davis. He's calling out all these guys in the media because he's so disappointed in them. And I'm kind of like, these are not championship level guides. These are like nice fringe dudes, but this is a rebuilding year for you. And I think that that's becoming more and more apparent.
That's why I don't understand why, like, I listen to the latest Hoop Collective and they're still talking about them as a leading candidate to Harden. And I don't think that's the way Masai rolls. I think Masai understands where they're at. And I think he's more likely to sell off Lowry at the deadline and start to retool than thinking, okay, we're James Harden away from contending again.
Right. He made the Kawhi move because he was like, we can do this.
Right.
Like, this is doable. And he was right. And then they added Gasol. Like, they added the pieces because he knew he had the window. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he did the Harden deal because he would also look at the Harden deal as, like, this extends our window. Like, I've got Harden and Van Vliet for X amount of years. We can do this. Like, you know, I can figure out a front court. Because he can. I just think he didn't in the offseason. And, you know, some of that, too, is, like, I think Aaron Baines has played worse than expected. I think he's just struggling with the scheme. And he'll probably get up to speed, and that will be better. I like Alex Len a lot. I think he will play better. I think that he'll get better. I think that they're a team that could get better as the season goes on. But to let you know, like, the expectations and where these things are at, because, like, the market, I think, is a really interesting telltale on these things. They're only 3-point dogs of the Suns tomorrow in Phoenix. Now, that's a bait line. Yeah. So I'm terrified of it. but it just to me, like, that shows you that people are still like, they're still the Raptors. And I'm like, are they? Because I don't know if they are at this point. They're not even the Toronto Raptors at this point. They're the Tampa Bay Raptors at this point.
I do want to say, because you have brought up gambling, before we say goodbye today, Matt, we have to talk about this because you picked up.
I know where this is going.
You picked up my preseason system, baby, and then Wob went on went on whatever FanDuel's network is and outed it, and the lines went away. Matt, what happened?
Yeah, I should have kept that one under my hat. That was a problem.
We figured that out live, Matt, on a podcast, because Carter's sitting there and he's dejected. He's like, "Wob, like, this is my life work," and he just tweeted it out. And he's like going through. He's like, "I haven't really told that many people." And like, I told Matt Moore. I'm like, "Well, you know, it works with the action." I'm like, "Oh, Carter, like the gear started turning," and then he realized he's his own worst enemy.
I was apoplectic, Matt, because this has been 5 straight years of like a free $500, $600 stimulus check to me. And now it's over. I ruined it.
Don't worry. They'll come back next year. It'll be back.
I think they'll forget. I think that this is, you know, I hope this is a short-term setback. And I will say, I always cool off near the end of preseason when teams start actually figuring shit out and trying to get ready. So, you know, here's hoping we're back to normal, but yeah.
This year was only the end of preseason.
I'm glad you picked it up, but maybe just like keep it between us next time.
Don't tweet. That's the
never tweet.
The moral of the story is A, don't tweet, and B, you are always your own worst enemy. That's
usually that is more. You're damn right. I am.
I will tell you since you're a FanDuel user, I will tell you the thing I've been doing quite a bit. FanDuel is one of the books that will provide you second quarter lines in advance. Most, like, some books will only allow first quarter. They won't provide second quarter until the game is live. If you can get a second quarter line, some of these bench units, oh my God. The Cavs actually, when they were fully healthy and not a fragile shell of themselves, were a great second quarter bet because they would still play the same level of defense, especially with Nance coming in. Like, Nance would just tear up these second quarters, and there was great value there. I'm basically fading Portland every second quarter. I'm just betting against Melo Cantor every single night.
Well, so here's the thing. I am a FanDuel user only, through some friends, because I live in Ohio. So it's a little, the live bets and the mid, you know, the game bets, specific lines are a little harder for me to get through, if you know what I'm saying.
I hear you.
I do appreciate the tip, and I'm sure our listeners do as well.
No, it is always a safe bet having Matt Moore on the podcast. Matt, we really, really do appreciate your time. If you guys aren't already following him, HP Basketball, go follow him. If you're listening to us and you don't know who he is, you're insane. I think that's a very small portion of people. You can also check him out at the Action Network. Big, big thanks to you, Matt, and to all our listeners. We appreciate you as well. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. So stay safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.